Welcome back at the Horse Friends podcast. My name is Selina Skogan and my guest today is Margarete Lee. She's a horse trainer from the area around Oslo and her home is also the Academic Art of Riding. But next to that, she has studied equine behavior on a very professional level and she has a master in etology. And today we will talk about her journey into equine behavior, and we have already set up a date for a second podcast because we had such a great conversation. I hope you are enjoying it as much as I did, and then let's just start the show. Welcome everybody to the Horse Friends podcast, and today I'm sharing my morning coffee with Margarete Lee. And Margarete is a horse trainer from Norway, and she also has a master in etology, and she's also a trained behavior consultant. And I think this is a really cool combination. And Margarete and I think the first time we met in Denmark at Ben's place, right? Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So
the first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that makes it pretty clear that your home is as mine in the Academic Art of Riding, and we share a passion for horses. Welcome, Margarete.
Thank you.
Margarete, how was it? Tell me a little bit about the timeline in your life. Were you first interested in Academic Art of Riding, or was it first the horse behavior you got interested in?
It was first horse behavior, and I was only after high school. Mm-hmm. I had some years traveling, so mm-hmm. I went first to Sweden to Elnofsta and learned about clicker training and body language.
Cool.
And then, really fun. So I stayed there for a half year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, those really nice autumn rainy days when it's so fun being a horse person and there mm-hmm. you are wet completely through and it's
yeah.
cold.
Yeah.
And then I was finally, yeah.
mm-hmm. Feel you.
Feel to go through it. And then yeah. when I come inside, I was opening my computer, or I take a warm shower and cuddle in a blanket and open my computer, and there it was. Do you want to be a practicant in Caribbean? So that was my
Sounds
next
very
question.
Tempting.
Because, yes, I wanted to.
Okay.
And I stayed there for 4 months.
Wait. You actually did an internship in the Caribbean?
Yes.
And for what?
With it behavior training. And it was with Stina Herberg, and she's really fast at answering. So 24 mm-hmm. hours later, after sitting being called, I had booked tickets
to St.
Vincent's and the Grenadines. So really far away from everything.
Wow.
And first time I traveled alone and so on.
And was it also horses that you were working with there?
Yes.
In the Grenadines?
So yes.
I'm going too. Hello.
So that was 4 months of going with a herd of horses free around you, swimming with them at the beach, sitting in a hammock and looking at horse behavior. Of course, I learned a lot about the training, but mm-hmm. to be able to sit and look at the horses communicating with each other for many, many hours every day until it wasn't anymore oh, that horse talks to this one. Oh, there's something happening. But
yes.
it was like being in a constant conversation.
Yes.
And so I learned a lot from that. And it was warm. And it's a quite magical feeling when you just go to the beach, swim with the horses, five horses, one or two in a lead rope, sitting in the hammock and the horses go to sleep around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, being in Caribbean is not a bad
wow.
place to be.
Wow. Wow. You know, I'm sitting in Tromsø, right? So, or even a little
yeah.
further north than Tromsø. So I feel it's really tempting to pack my suitcase right now and go to. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And after that, mm-hmm. I wanted to learn more about wild horses because some of the horses that Stina had was not really, or at least one of them wasn't tame yet. So working with a horse that are not tame is really fun and interesting, and you learn so much about body language and communication and patience.
Yes.
So, so the next place then I wanted to do something with wild horses. And there was Googling and more Googling, and then I found Return to Freedom. And so the next adventure after that was California.
Wow.
And a wild horse sanctuary. So, and I stayed there for 3 months, I think. In the end, I had 11 training horses, somewhere between you can't go into the fence because then they are going to run around in panic to Holterbrook. I worked with the basic work, yeah. So you can touch them, put halter on, and so on. And yeah, it was also a lot of learning and long days because 11 horses and stable work is a lot. But it was, I think I come at a good time because there was people that stopped working there right before me. So they had, they needed more people. And I got a lot of responsibility. And from that, you get a lot of learning.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, that's a deal when you are doing an internship, right? It's a shitload of work, but you are also getting basically a fantastic education.
Yes. So they, I didn't have so many lessons when I was there, but I was training wild horses and there was many of them and there was
they
people
gave
I
you
could
the lessons.
Yes. And there was people I could ask if I needed help.
That's cool.
So, and I learned important things like you need to make sure you can take the halter off before you put it on or you're going to spend time getting it off again. It was, yeah, it was interesting in the part of planning ahead and not putting the horse in a situation that is difficult to come out from.
Yes.
And when working with behavior now, that's one of the most important things I do and one of the most important things I do when I try to help people, because you should never put yourself and your horse in a situation you can't get out of. If that is walking too far away from home with a scared horse or any situation you put the horse in, you should be able to get it out and start with the part of getting them out and back to their comfort zone.
That's a really, I mean, that's a really important point, right? It sounds so, of course, but how often are we seeing it that people are really getting into trouble because, I haven't thought about that point.
Yeah. And of course, even when thinking about that point, I still do it sometimes. Going, don't plan, or you judge the situation wrong and then you're standing like, not a good plan.
No, I don't do it again. Big learning, bad outcome.
And if one is conscious of the fact that I was the one putting the horse in this situation that we couldn't handle, then the reaction towards the horse is going to be different than if you just go, why can't you handle this situation?
I understand.
So when, at the same time as I did it, I did an equine massage therapist education. Right after high school too, just because I wanted to work with behavior. And there is so often pain involved in behavior problems. And I do some massage treatments now, but I use it all the time because I it gave me more knowledge about analyzing if the situation comes from pain and where is the pain and
where's the pain located?
And what should we now do to do something about it? And of course, massage isn't always this answer. But if you can locate where the pain is, then you have a clue of where to go from there.
Yeah, that is really true. And I also think, at least, you know, I have been nearly stopping, or I'm not giving a lot of treatments anymore. What I'm doing much more and what I really enjoy doing is to empower horse owners and show them little tools how they can work with their horses. And I'm really getting keener and keener on teaching the basic, you know, basic behavior, basic health issues that people are starting to get more and more aware of. How can they themselves, they have so much power in their hand, how can they themselves do tiny little twists, makes the horse life so much better. And that is definitely integrated into my practice when I'm thinking about teaching. And I guess that's the same for you.
Yes, it is. And it's important to be able to see and then go from there.
Yes. So, I think my lowest point was that I was called to a customer for a treatment, a new customer that I haven't had before. Mm-hmm. And then I came there and there was a 1.75 meter horse in a 2.50 meter box. And the horse could go backwards in and forward out, but he couldn't turn. He never had, so he had access to a small paddock, but he never had social contact. He never saw grass field. And the horse owner called me because the travers to the left side was a little difficult. And then I saw the complete setup and thought, okay, this will not work. I mean, I can give you a massage or I can give you a cranial treatment, but that will it will lead us somewhere. And let's face it, the travers is the least problem you are having. That was the point where I said, okay, I need to change something for keeping my mental health. Mm. And that's also the reason why we are organizing now, or why my company is organizing now things like the online summit in February, where you are also participating. So let's continue a little bit with your timeline. Were you going directly afterwards to Bend, or was there another?
No, there was more between there because so I was the first three. When I look back at it, as I was really happy about how I set it up, because when I was with Elnafsa, I had so many lessons.
Wow.
And that's really good. And then I was two places where I got to, I had some lessons with Stina, but I also had a lot of time watching horses. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lot of time training the next place. Mm-hmm. And then I decided that I wanted to be places where there are more people. That was one part of it. And I really like school. So I decided to do equine science bachelor. And I thought that, traveling is done. Mm. And then I was a week student with Michelle.
And that was my first
meeting. Yes, just a week. And because people were talking about that the academic art of riding is good for the horse and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But people say a lot of stuff that not necessarily true, especially when they learn new things, then it's it's everything. Yes.
It's like a religion. I know.
So I was down there for a week and I had lessons, and of course I was like just checking the riding school horses a little bit, and I had at that point never like touched horses that were in like, of course some have problems, blah blah blah, but most of them were so okay, just in their bodies with the way they moved. And I was like, it's riding school horses. So I thought, there might be something to this. And then after I started at the university and I thought I was done traveling, I think it was 2 months in, I found out that we have classes in June and August that are just 1 month. And if you do them double, you can skip them. And so I went to Monica Sanders for a summer for the 3 months that I then found out that, hey.
Monica is in Sweden. We have to say that. Yeah.
Mm. Yes. So I stayed there for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then I just stayed in Norway, studied, and so on. Until the bachelor year. It was a very good year. Because I, of course, wanted to do a field study. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it on wild horses. Mm-hmm. And so that went to a lot of looking, how can I make this happen? And it was Lucy Reese was organizing field trip. It was supposed to be to Venezuela, but then there was war there, so it was changed to Ecuador.
And Ecuador, wow.
And so I did field trip there looking at wild horses. And then I was, of course, traveling. And by this point, I traveled some, and I was over the part where you just go straight. You have to use a trip. And so I did classes where you just write a paper for the rest of my credits that half year. And then I went for 2 months instead of 2 weeks. And I was backpacking, not with horses, but I also got 2 weeks with Mustang Camp in New Mexico, where they use clicker training, completely just clicker training for taming horses.
Cool.
And that was efficient. So, and also there, she's really good at, or she has the interns thing because she loves teaching. So she will evaluate you, and then she will give you horses to challenge you from tape day 2 or something. And so that was also really cool. And they have a very fixed program with steps each horse go through before going to the next one. And each one is done with clicker training and shaping. And because you get horses in different stages when she puts training of horses course. On you. So you get to see or try the whole, or I got to see and try the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that gives a lot of tools how to, and it was interesting, of course. And
when you're talking about that, what was the lesson that was outstanding for you? Like, you know, we always have these, or we all know these aha moments where.
Oh, yes, I actually have one really good from there, because it was only clicker training. And then the focus in all the exercises was to get the horses to be the active participants.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at that time why that was so extremely efficient with the fair, but I knew when I did the stress class at the university later, animal stress, because there is, of the tools you have when you're really afraid, power over the situation is maybe the strongest.
It's a game
one.
Changer, yeah.
Yes. So to actually have the control, both to go into the situation and to go out of it and be in control of scary things are a really, really, really powerful tool.
This is the same that we are working with when we are doing trauma therapy in like in cranio or whatever, that we don't get the horse or the human passive, but that we put them back into power. That sounds really interesting. Tell us more.
So, it was only 2 weeks, but it was 2 extremely good weeks because I learned so much. And also working with a system where you only use positive reinforcement, so only use shaping and clicker training for everything.
Mm-hmm.
That was also interesting because then you see solutions that you maybe wouldn't otherwise do. Yeah. And then it was actually only 10 days, but it was 10 days and 10 hours every day with watching the wild horses. So it was sleeping and being outside. And that's the, one of the things I'm talking about in the conference is from that master. So it's the chewing study.
Yeah, we will talk about that a little bit more about the chewing study because I think it's so important. Just continue with your story there.
And then because I'm not a very patient person, so when you start with, oh no, you're supposed to do a year of almost only boring classes.
Mm-hmm.
There is only one solution, you do more classes.
Okay.
So I was quite ahead of the studies, and that I used for my first internship with Bent.
Ah.
So the first internship there, I was at the university and I did get the scholarship in Norway because I just put myself up on classes and didn't go to them. And without any negative consequences, because I had was so far ahead of the studies.
Fantastic.
So that made it quite easy economically and cool. Possible to do it. So that was a whole year where I didn't really do normal classes. I had some interesting project in the start of the year with animal communication and cognition, I think. And there were some papers on that. And then I traveled to Ecuador and did a field study, went to New Mexico, and then wrote a bachelor in summer. And then went to, I think only a week after finishing the bachelor, I went down to Denmark. And I was supposed to stay for 3 months. But the girl that I was together with, she couldn't stay for her whole period. So I think I was there for 5.
Nice.
And then, yeah. So that was my second internship with the Academical Art of Writing.
Yeah.
And next, it was back to studying. And I did my master. And I did it on, I wanted to do on something with social learning or something like that. And I ended up doing it with mimicry between horse and handler. Okay. And with a two-part study, one with seeing if the human changed their behavior, would that make the, or step length and so on, would that make the horse change theirs? And it did. So that
and it did,
cool.
Of course. Yeah.
Yes. And the other part was if the person pretended to be afraid of something, would the horse react to that? And of course, that also
of course
did. So even though the objects that they were pretending to be afraid of was different for, so I had 4 objects, and for some there were, they were afraid of, person was afraid of 2, and some they were afraid of the other 2. And the horses really didn't care when the person didn't act afraid. But if the person was afraid and I said, and there's spiders in there, then there were reactions. And it was, that was also, of course, an interesting thing to do for the master, but it has been so, so important for how I'm training and teaching.
Ah.
Because you can do everything with just mimicry. You can do side movements, you can change the length of the step, you can change the weight distribution, which also can, like if you focus on it a lot, can be a problem because that means you have to have control of how you're working yourself, and that's not always easy.
Yeah.
But it's fun, and there's so many possibilities to kind of skip, or you get things fast, and also when you're not focusing on how you're moving yourself, you have to teach the horse to not follow you, and that's not really what we want.
It's not,
and
no.
It gets no, but it's necessary if you are walking yourself and blocking the horse from doing a side movement. Then you have to teach the horse that even when I'm telling you, not consciously, but I'm still telling you that you should not do it, you should when I'm giving you a secondary aid for it.
Yeah.
And so that makes up for a lot of conflicts. And in my experience when teaching, it makes for most of the situations where horses have problem lunging, for example. If the horse throws itself around and rearing and
typical
doing a lot, most of the time it's because the person say stop, go away, and then the rope say you can't go away, and the whip say go forward, and the horse is like,
and the horse says
can't
what?
Go forward, can't go out, can't go back, not allowed to stop.
Oh, what the hell? Yeah.
Is that fair? Yeah.
Yeah. This typical moment, you know, when the horse is coming from the open, do you say that in English? Actually the open side, you know, where the circle doesn't have a wall, and then it's hitting the fence.
Yeah.
And then the person is standing in the way, and then we see this conflict. Yeah.
And it's easy when, like, it's easy for the person to understand that it's a problem if you're close to the fence.
Yeah.
It's hard for the person to consider it a problem if you're standing on the other side of the arena and there's 20 meters between you on the fence. But if you have a polite horse, it doesn't really matter if you say, I'm going towards their friends. That's my area. Mm-hmm. And the horse will go, okay, sure.
It's yours.
Of course, not go there. And then the person gets angry at the horse. And then,
yeah.
Or just frustrated.
Yes.
So, yeah. Or the other one where your body language is saying, please come closer. And for us, if we are afraid or feel the horse is close, we want to move away.
Yeah.
And then our body language say, please come closer.
Please come closer.
And our mind says, please don't kill me. And that makes for a lot of uncomfortable situations.
A lot of conflict that is coming up there, right?
Yeah.
And with the very best intention, but still a lot of conflict.
Very best intention. And for some, it gives conflict. And for some, it's just really bad for the self-confidence. Because if you are unsure or scared, you do this. You move away a little bit and you tell the horse to come closer. And then you, a weak person, or that the horse is stepping on you, and really just you ask the horse to come.
Yeah.
And then your self-confidence is worse, and then you do it more. Or you get scared, or you've been dumped into or something.
Yeah, we have a situation like this right now here on the farm.
Oh, so, yeah.
Because
I don't remember what we were eating.
Yeah. Pardon, I lost you now. Do you have to repeat the last sentence, please?
Okay. Yes, I said that I don't remember what we were talking about.
Neither do I. But it's good. No.
I think you're disappearing.
Yeah.
Are you there? You're moving.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. Your connection broke for a second. But yeah, we have a situation like this on the farm now. My Frederiksborger is taking over the lead of the flock. He's a very strong and very prominent horse. And when I am around, he behaves like a puppy. No problems, nothing at all. But now we are having one of our neighbors is stabling her foal here. And each time when she is, and this is exactly this, she is not used to horses. She's a little bit scared and she's doing exactly this behavior of don't come closer to me. And he is understanding, come closer to me. So.
Yeah,
there's a lot of conflict, and she's getting really, really scared. Though the horse doesn't have a bad intention, at all.
No,
so just a miscue.
And more. Yeah.
Are you actually giving courses about that? I should invite you to teaching a webinar about that for one of the year groups that I'm having.
I do. That's one of the. Yeah.
That would be cool. But I would like to talk a bit more for today. I would like to talk a bit more about this stress issue, also because of the licking and chewing study that you made. And it's not so many people that know your name, but many people have hopefully at least heard about that study or even read an article or even read that study about licking and chewing. Because it has a deep impact into how we are understanding horses and how we are understanding horse behavior, especially in the riding arena. And when I grew up, I very often heard that sentence that when the horse is licking and chewing in a lesson, for example, this is the moment where the horse is processing something or learning something.
Mm-hmm.
And your study showed a very different aspect of that behavior. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The most important part of it was that what I had data on is that it happens between the horse being tense and the horse being relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I had some situation because I had heard a lot that people said, no, the horse is chewing to show that you are the boss. For example, if you do join-ups, you go chase the horse until they start licking and chewing, because then you're strong and you're the boss.
Then you're a strong leader. Okay.
Yes. And so I, of course, also noted what individual was doing the chewing, and from that one, and then together with who was moving away. So if you had a conversation, then what individual was chewing, and then who moved away.
I see, yeah.
And there was quite many situations where the horse moving and then being moved, the horse that moved the other horse away was chewing.
I see. Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
And that was when your interest rose in that behavior, or how did that come up?
Good question.
I know. I have a lot of questions.
I actually don't remember what started it. Like there was I wanted to do something on communication and signals. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot of trying to make the questions more clear, because you mm-hmm. can't collect data if it's not defined. You need very defined questions.
Of course.
Yeah. That was also some of the reason why I ended up there. And I wanted to do something on calming signals, like the mm-hmm. it's okay, I don't want to fight signals. But mm-hmm. in the work of trying to define the questions more, I ended up with what stress level, or what kind of behavior do we have before or after? Is it high stress level behavior, or is it low stress level behavior?
Cool. Very interesting. And then you did your bachelor. Was it your bachelor work?
That was the bachelor work.
Yeah,
that was the bachelor work. And then on mimicry was my master.
Cool.
So, because I had something really interesting for my bachelor. So then I, of course, needed to do something cool for the master too. And then the reason why it's so well known, because it's just a bachelor, was because I went to a Queen Science conference.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, and mm-hmm. then I presented it, and it was got a lot of attention, and that was a couple of years after I had done it. So
mm-hmm.
it's the feeling when something you do actually can be so useful.
Yes, it's
really nice, because it's so many people knowing about it and can use it, and that's nice.
So you will talk, or you will have a talk during the summit about that study, but for just putting it in a nutshell, we are close to the end of our podcast today. Just putting it in a nutshell, what has changed in your perspective since you have done, or since you have learned that piece of knowledge, since you gaze at that piece of knowledge?
That's a difficult question. I'm not sure so much change, just more the kind of security in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was kind of what I expected, but mm-hmm. With more clear results than maybe I expected. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Very, very interesting.
And the other talk that I'm going to do, because there's two.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, there's two.
Mm-hmm. is also one of my favorite ways to look at it, because it's so easy to think that the horse personality and how they are behaving, especially outside in the herd, is something mm-hmm. fixed. Like, that horse is that way and it can't mm-hmm. do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Or this sort of group of horses doesn't work so well together and it's just how it is. Or this mm-hmm. group works fantastic. And that's probably just magic. And of course, it's personalities, and some people or horses get along with other horses better. But it's also a lot in how you put off the stables. Which is why you can come to some places and go, oh, the horses here are so relaxed and they get so well along. And you can go up to the same place or the same type of person mm-hmm. or setup mm-hmm. 10 years later with just maybe one or two horses that are the same. And you will still get they will still get along and they will still be peace and good feeling. And a lot of that is how we set up the environment.
Yeah.
So how do we set up the environment so we give the horses a lot to fight about, or do we set it up so they are friends? And is there a point for the horse to argue with each other, or is there enough resources for everyone?
Yeah, I think resources is a really crucial point also when we are considering stress levels and stuff. You know, I'm at a different point in my life now. My horses are actually having so many resources that the discussion is more where is the use of the training in that. You know, when my what I'm thinking about a lot right now is my horses are training themselves outside in the mountains. They are super happy. They are super playful. Sometimes they like to have a butt scratch with me. They like hanging out with me. But always before, there was like, you know, I never had that much space. Now we are having with seven horses, 60 hectares. So that is a lot. They are as close, let's call it rewilding, or as close to nature as possible. And they have free food. There's no limitation of that, and free water and all this. So you have to find a different level of communication when you're thinking about training. There is no reason anymore why they should enjoy the training. It's a completely different situation as when you are having the horse in a box and then on a paddock, even on a group paddock, and then you are coming and the horse is happy because it's getting out of that group paddock and can do something else. So now I have to struggle with giving my work meaning.
Yeah, but that is a beautiful thing because it should have meaning, and it also means freedom to for the training to actually just be valuable, because you don't have to say, oh, I need to train condition for you, or I need to make sure you have strength, because so you can just go.
The really cool things about that is I can really go in as a trainer and as a teacher. I don't have to think about fitness. That is super cool. But, you know, it's more a thing for myself. I think it's less what the horses are thinking about. It's more a thing for myself that I really, each time before I'm going in there and asking a horse, would you like to come with me? And they are still lining up and saying, I would like to come with you. I'm really standing there brushing the pony and think, okay, how do I give meaning to this session today? But yeah, it's a certain freedom of choice, and that makes it, of course, also nice.
Yes. I like when the training should just, like, in the life the horses have the rest of the days should be as good as possible, and then the training should just be even better. It's a much nicer setup than when you have to do the training to have the quality of life you want the horse to have.
I absolutely agree on that.
Except for when you're checking fences, I'm guessing.
Oh, my. You know, we have a lot of snow. I know you are in the area of Oslo. I don't know how much snow you are having, but we have a lot of snow.
Yes. I have, it's 2 hours away from Oslo, and it's much more snow than I have ever had before, but not the amounts you have, I think. But it's from December to March, and no match. It's beautiful.
Yeah, here the snow stays till May, but that's always in May when I move away from Norway. That's always the moment where it's enough. But my point is more that when you have so much snow, eventually the best fence is breaking down. So I am calculating on a lot of fence fixing time each winter. I think the best investment we did was an automatic heating for the water. That
one. Yeah.
That was really crucial. Yeah. So, Margarete, thank you for that this morning. And I really enjoyed this conversation. So I hope we can continue that and talk a bit more about stress and trauma another time.
That's going to be lovely.
Yeah, so very welcome back. But if people want to find you and are interested in taking lessons with you, what possibilities do they have?
I do week clinics, wherever.
Okay, and so you're traveling for teaching?
I'm traveling for teaching. Mm-hmm. And then I have private lessons, mostly around Oslo, some mm-hmm. closer to where I live too. And then I do some online both private lessons and actually, I do online courses, but they are in Norwegian. So yeah. For Norwegian people, I do online classes, but I can do lectures mm-hmm. in both Norwegian and English.
We will definitely invite you on the membership platform for the Academia membership platform. And let's talk about that. We will do something cool there together. But first, we are seeing you on the summit, and we will link you in the show notes. And also the courses, perfect. The online courses that we can link in the show notes so people can find you back. And then nice. I would say thank you for today and looking forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you. Bye. For today. Bye. Bye-bye.